All right. Well, my name is Chris Sauter. I am with my wife, Nikki. We're the marriage and family pastors here. And welcome to the Vineyard. We are right in the middle of our Building Blocks series. We are in week number 2 out of 3. And really, just like Michael said in the video, I just want to catch the vision again. Like, we want to know or feel what it looks like to fully occupy our neighborhoods, to fully occupy our city streets. Because I feel like if we can learn how to do this, to take the words of Jesus literally, of loving our neighbors, like, we want to love everyone. We want to engage whoever is right in front of us, but the people we come home to that live around us, you know, if that's at an apartment, your dorm, you know, like 5 houses in your block, or you're out in the country, you're like out in Renshaw, Minnesota, and your neighbors are like 5 minutes away, like, we still want to know, what could happen? What kind of impact could we have if we actually began to engage people, learn their names, hear their stories, and begin to really actually love people? Because I feel like it just wouldn't just make some nice little things. I think it could really change a culture and bring in a culture of serving one another, of loving one another, and really caring for one another. But today what I want to talk about is tables. I don't know if you know this. Like, we've had a table up here for, I don't know, like a year or 2 years. Michael stole it from some friends of mine, and he never gave it back. But tables, right? Tables can speak to a lot of different things. Like, when you see a table, like a dinner table, you might get stressed out because if, like, at your house, a table is just a place to accumulate stuff, right? Mails, keys, your kids, just kick on the table, whatever it might be. But when I see a table, I can't help but think of when I was a kid. There was 7 of us, and we sat around a table, and I'm not lying for effect here, a table that wasn't too much bigger than this, and all 7 of us would just cram around it, and we all had big poofy hair and freckles, right? So it doesn't help when you're crammed in someone's hairs in your eye, and you're crammed around there, and I learned a lot around that table. I learned a lot. I learned how to pray. Like, we'd pray around that table, the same prayer from until I left the house. It was God bless Mom, Dad, Tara, Tina, Keetran, Christopher, Daniel. And then if we had a dog, the dog would get thrown in there too. And you would know the relationship of the dog and my dad by the prayer, because the prayer would always end if the dog Bonnie, you know, like, ran away, my dog would say, and God bless, stupid dog Bonnie. You know, dads have their own special, like, little grumble they have. And Bonnie would run away often, and one time she ran away and sadly never came back. You know, I miss you, Bonnie. And for 3 years, we'd make my dad still pray for that dog. Because we're like, what if? God can do all things, right, Dad? All right, and the stupid dog Bonnie, all right? I learned about the military around the table, right? Because if you were reaching for, like, the butter, my dad would say, well, if in the army, they put a fork through your hand, right? Found out later my dad was never actually in the army at all. just scare tactics. And I learned about how to climb the social ladder in life at the dinner table, right? You remember you're a kid and you're at Easter or at a holiday and you and your cousin are running around the corner and you see 2 tables. There's 1 table that is all pretty, has, like, candles on it and, like, napkins that are folded like as a swan. And then there's a kid table as far away from the other table as possible. And basically just, like, the old broken down furniture kicked in the corner. You know, throw some Jell-O and butter and buns on there. Right? And when you were a kid, that kid table is like an exotic island of possibilities, right? Because if there's Jell-O and butter on the table, you can eat the butter as much as you want. No one's going to tell you no. Right? No one's going to tell you no. You can have Jell-O, you can be laughing, you can do whatever you want, and it's just this beautiful thing. But then there comes the age when you're cutting up, you know, Billy's meatloaf, and he's putting Jell-O up his nose, and you kind of, like, faintly look behind you, and you hear them, like, talking about quantum physics, and you see your older brother who's 15 laughing at puns. You don't know what a pun is, but you like it, and you want it, right? And they're reading articles of poetry from the New Yorker, and they're laughing at the cartoons. We don't know what it means, but it's so funny, and it's just, all of a sudden, this exotic island turns into the Rock, turns into Alcatraz, right? And you're Sean Connery, and you're trying to break loose to think, I have to get out of this table into that table, right? Because at this adult table is where position is, it's where power is, it's where authority is, it's where I become somebody. And finally that day comes, and you know, Uncle Peter comes by and says, "Hey, you know what? You want to sit at the adult table?" And it's like the heavens that opened up. Ah. And what's the first thing you do when you sit at that adult table? Right? You sit down, and maybe you got a little teen sport coat, and you know, brushing it off, give yourself a couple of attaboys, and you turn around at the kid table, and you're like, "Look at those guys. Look at those jokers. Yeah, they're probably eating butter right now, but who cares?" Right? Because now you are in a position. You're in a position of power, of authority, and you can dictate and use it to your advantage. See, tables can speak a lot, and you can learn a lot from tables. But I think a table can mean something more than just accumulating stuff. A table is a symbol, it's a sign, a natural place for us to congregate, for us to connect. It's almost like a place where there is an easy place for community. So, like, maybe in your family right now, the dinner table is something where you don't actually eat dinner at a whole lot. Like, let's be honest. Like, in my family, you don't get to eat dinner all at once every single night, 7 days a week around the dinner table. You know, maybe you have to go to work early, you have to come home late, or you just never come home from work at all. You know, it's like you're just always gone. There's sports, or there's things going on in your life where you just have to miss out on the table. Like, but when you finally get everyone around that table, like all your roommates, like are actually in town, not working, and you can sit down and eat some pizza. Or you and your partner can sit across the table at a nice restaurant, or you have your like adult kids home with all their kids, and you finally get just to sit around the table. It feels good, doesn't it? To like look around the table and see your family and your friends. Like, why does that feel so good? What is it about just sharing a table with like your sister or sharing a cup of coffee with your brother or some friends or your neighbors? Why does that feel so good? Here's why. Because I believe that we're built for relationship. That we are made to connect with one another. We're not meant just to live life in the go, 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 go. But when you can sit down and like hash out old memories of college, when you can like hear your dad's story of Ginn, how he used to get his haircuts on top of the freezer in the basement, you know, he put the bowl on the head and right? You hear the same story over and over again, but it just feels good. I think that's powerful because we're sharing life with one another. You know, and we're in the middle of the series, the building blocks about trying to actually connect with our actual neighbors. This gets me thinking. Do we have any, like, tables, table-like places in our community? Places where it's just a natural connecting spot for your neighbors just to congregate, to gather, where they feel welcome? Because at least from what I know, like, a lot of times we don't really have too many places where our neighbors can feel welcome. We pull in our garages, we have our security fences, we get out of our cars, we don't have to see anyone, we have quick waves, we have little nods, we got like the double guns to each other, but really, right? We don't have always this natural way of connecting. Like, what would it look like if your front yard, let's just use that, let's say your front yard was like a table, where there wasn't this intimidation of crossing your property line, where people felt welcome, they could come in and wave and maybe say hi back and shake their hand. What if it could be a place where you could throw a blanket down and watch like the 4th of July fireworks? Where maybe you could throw the baseball around with the kids, you can eat some popsicles, where you can just simply share life. And this is really what we're looking to do. This is one of our goals, is we just really want to connect in our communities with our actual neighbors. And a table, I believe, can be a big part of that. Maybe table-like places, or maybe it's literally inviting people over to have a meal, sharing on the back deck, wherever it might be. But there's this guy, Jesus, right? And Jesus, too, he was a table guy. He was down with the table, right? He loved tables because throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus engaged in relationship with people, sharing a meal at weddings. He loved tables so much, he even tells stories about tables, right? Like throughout his life, we see him just often at a table connecting with people because Jesus was highly relational. He was a relational guy. And he wasn't just this, like, extreme extrovert who was insecure about being alone, so he had to be around people like, "Hey, don't leave, where are you going? Want to hang out, please? I don't want to be alone." Right? Jesus loved connecting with people because he genuinely loved people. And out of this way of this relationship of sitting around a table and sharing meals and sharing life, like Jesus was able to connect in a real way. And in John 13, we see again Jesus hanging out at a table. John 13, this is a story of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. And again, Jesus is sitting at a table, and it's significant for a couple different reasons. He's celebrating the Passover meal, which was a Jewish holiday that they did every single year as a way of celebrating and remembering how God showed up and saved the day, how he delivered them out of the hands of Pharaoh as part of the story and led them and ushered them to this like this new hope. And so they celebrated it with this organized meal around a table in community year after year after year. So Jesus is here around this table celebrating Passover. But also it's significant because it's his last night. It's his last night with his disciples. The next day, he's going to be crucified. And what is Jesus doing? Sitting at a table. Just hanging out, connecting, sharing life with his disciples. Because this is who Jesus was. Jesus was a person who was intentional about being in relationship. Jesus sought out people to connect with them in relationship. And the reason I'm saying this is because, you know, if it was my last night, all right, before I'm about to be killed, I'd probably be freaking out, right? I'd be like, what am I going to do? Can I fix this? Come on, help me, right? And here Jesus is just sharing a meal with his disciples or his students, these 12 men. And it's really easy to miss the point of what Jesus is actually demonstrating here. Like, this isn't the first time that Jesus sought out people in relationship. It happens time and time and time and time again, where he's connecting with people. You know, it's easy for me to sometimes forget that Jesus is about relationship. Because in our spirituality and our faith, sometimes we can make it about almost everything but relationship, right? It's like sometimes we can view spirituality or Christianity about a way of just managing the things we do. It's like I have to do more good things and then less bad things and hope that wins. But if this starts getting up, better make something up. All right, God, hey. Like we get in this way of sin management. Or we can look at our spirituality or our faith as a way of just doing a bunch of tasks or things we're not supposed to do. Like, well, I better learn my neighbor's names because someone told me I'm supposed to do that, so I just got to do it and be done with it, right? But what Jesus did is Jesus was about relationship. And in the midst of this relationship, he was connecting with them, hearing the story, sharing his story, but he was pointing them to something bigger, which is the story of God, this intimate relationship with his Father. You see, my wife, a couple years ago, who's actually sitting right up here, she's up there, love you, double guns, ba-bam, all right? my wife, a couple years ago, got together with some of her friends and went up the North Shore to spend a couple nights together. And because of just life circumstances, it was a while before they could all really get together and hang out. And the way my wife came home, the way she told this story was just foreign to me, and you're going to hear why in a little bit. They sat down Saturday morning, drinking some coffee, eating some breakfast, and one person, one of these ladies, like five or six of them, just started talking. Talked and started sharing about what's happened the past 6 months, about how her parents are doing, her siblings. And then that sparked someone else across the table for them to take the conversation, and they talked and just kept going, and they're laughing. I'm assuming they were crying as well because that's what girls do when they laugh too hard. So they're crying, they're laughing, they're filling in. And the way my wife made it sound, it was like there wasn't too many pauses in the conversation. They're drinking more coffee, and finally there's just a pause in the conversation. And one of the ladies like looked down at their watch, and she starts laughing. And they're like, what happened? What's so funny? Like, oh, it's 2:00. We've been talking nonstop for 6 hours. Does this not amaze you? This is so foreign to me. I couldn't talk for 6 hours at all. And so they intentionally took a break, said, let's leave for a little bit. And then they came back, and they talked till early hours in the morning. And the way Nikki talked was they just got so lost in this conversation. Sitting around this table, it felt so good to hear people's story, to not be talking about diapers and, you know, cloth diapers or disposable diapers. All, it was just about connecting, sharing real life where you just got immersed in it, where you just didn't really care about the time. Like, has this happened to you? Like that great meal, you went out with your friends and you're talking, you're eating, and you order some dessert and some coffee, and all of a sudden the lights are like turning off, and all of a sudden you pop out of like that magical world of adult conversation. You're like looking around and the waiters are all giving you this look. And it's been like 3 hours and you're shutting down the restaurant. You think, we haven't done this since college. Yeah, high-fiving your spouse. Or maybe it is one of the first times you met your partner. And you couldn't stop hearing their stories. You just wanted more and more. There's something beautiful about getting lost in a conversation. There's something beautiful about having a relationship that you feel like you can get so intertwined with where you just can't let go. And that's what Jesus is doing. And that's what Jesus, throughout the Gospels, is inviting us into, is into this relationship. Not just a list of things to do, and not just a list of things not to do, but Jesus is inviting us to sit at a table and spend time with him. Like here at the Vineyard, when we talk about how we want people to experience God, we don't want them just to have just a spiritual experience at some conference. We don't want just people to just do good things because it is a really good thing. Like we want that. But what we're inviting people into is to sit at this table with the person of Jesus and laugh and cry and hear his story and share your story and maybe even get frustrated at the time and maybe just rest and hear the words that Jesus has to say about how he loves you and what he thinks about you over and over and over again. Like, this is what we're inviting people into. This is what Jesus is inviting us into. Is into an authentic relationship. All right, so back to the table. So Jesus is in relationship. He's hanging out, but there's something else that's interesting here. If you look in chapter 13 and verse number 2, it kind of tells you who's there. Like, so at the Last Supper, I'm asking you, like, who's at this table? Jesus, yes, Jesus is at the table. You get an A+, way to go. All right, who else is at this table, right? Well, we got a cheat sheet up here, right? Who are those people? Who? The apostles, the disciples, right? They're up there. But there's something significant about this. If you look in chapter 2, or chapter 13, verse 2, it says this. The evening meal was in progress, as you can clearly see, and the devil... That's not a good way to start a sentence. And the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. So at this table is his disciples. That happens to be Judas. So at this table, Judas is this guy, one of Jesus' disciples that Jesus invites him to follow him and spends time, learns. Judas ends up betraying Jesus, sells him out for some money, and kind of turns Jesus over to the authorities, which leads to Jesus being crucified. So at this table is Jesus' friends, like his buddies, people that he's investing in his time and energy to in his heart. But at this table, there's an enemy as well. Jesus is sharing, again, his last night with his friends and his enemy. And he welcomes them all to his table. So the way that Jesus was in relationship with people is he just didn't engage with people that made him feel comfortable. He just didn't connect with people just so that he could look really good and say, hey, are you going where I'm going? Come on, next to me. You make me look kind of good. I'm with him, right? Jesus engaged with whoever was around him. He sought out people. He didn't have you're in, you're out. He shared table with the rich and the poor, insider, outsider, men, women, young, old, friends, enemies, and maybe even a couple frenemies, right? But Jesus had every position. Jesus had every authority, every excuse to be able just to look at Judas and he walked in and go, whoa. Judas, what are you doing here? But Jesus being Jesus, right, he knew what was going on. He talks about it before this. He knows what Judas is going to do. You know he's going to betray him. Like, what, if this was you and I, wouldn't you be like, Judas, do what you got to do, but not tonight, man. I'm with my friends. Like, this is my last time. Just get out the door. We would take that position of power. We would take that position of authority. But Jesus doesn't do that. See, in reality, we do this a lot, where we try to take this position of trying to make ourselves feel comfortable in relationship with people. Have you ever been at work and you're working, hopefully, and then all of a sudden you just happen to be on Facebook, like you accidentally fell on your computer and it opened up your Facebook page, and you're like, oh, look, it's right there. So, and all of a sudden as you're playing Farmville, there is an invite to a party. And it's a party for the last episode of The Bachelor. You're like, oh, I love that show. Who's going to get the rose? I don't know. The tension is building, right? And your buddy Joe Bag of Donuts invited to the party, and you're like, yeah, awesome, Joe puts on a great party. And right before you hit yes, accept them to the party, you happen to just check the invite list, and you're like, whoa, wait, hold on the maybe, there's Sarah. Oh, Joe, you know Sarah and I have a history. I don't know if I can go there. And look, and George is coming too? All right, this is getting out of control. And you begin to say, can I go there and make an appearance? You try visualizing through your head because it's going to be awkward. And so you say, maybe, which really means no on Facebook, just so you know. So, and you put yourself in a position of power, a position of influence, of saying, I'm just going to avoid that because it makes me feel uncomfortable. Now, I'm not saying this is some horrible thing, right? But we do this in our neighborhoods as well. Like with your neighbors. Maybe you got a neighbor that you really like, or someone across the apartment, when they walk by, you're like, hey, Lucas, how you doing? You're waving over there and you're talking, you're sharing the tools, and you know, the master gardener, you're talking with him too, and it's great. But then the neighbor right next to you, like you see him and he's like waving at you, and you're like, you don't get a wave. You get a suspicious head nod. And why is that? Why does Lucas get this, but your neighbor over here gets this? Because his dog, you know, does his business, not on my yard, but close enough that I can see it. I don't like that, right? And you know what? He parks in my parking spot. What's that? No, not my driveway. I don't have a driveway. It's the city street, but everyone knows that's my spot, right? And you know what? Also, Chris, he, on a school night, he has people past 9:30 p.m. Are you kidding me? Who does that, right? Like, you know, I'm making light of it, but in our neighborhoods, in our apartment buildings, in our dorms, on our city streets, with our neighbors, we have some sort of offense that we have taken. Some list of hidden expectations that we expect other people to adhere to, or we might have some prejudice against our neighbors of who gets our time and attention and our affection, and who doesn't. And here we see Jesus just doesn't play that game. Like, Jesus invites everyone to this table. Jesus is engaging with everyone with his time, his energy, and his heart. Like, what would that look like if that's the way we lived in a neighborhood? Where we can, like, put away our hidden expectations. Where we could put away our prejudices or the way we've taken offense for our neighbors and begin to actually engage with people right where they're at and say, I'm going to choose to, like, engage in relationship with you. Like, I'm going to commit to learning your name instead of avoiding you all the time. You see, I think the potential of that is huge. I think the possibilities of actually learning how to love people right where they're at can be a game changer. All right, so Jesus doesn't take the position of authority. He has his friends, his enemies, all sitting at the same table. And what happens here is it sets the stage for something else. It sets the stage for something else he's about to do. I think we have it up on the screen. It's in verses 4 and 5, and I'm actually going to read through 7, but I think we only have 4 and 5 up there. This is what happens. So he, that's Jesus, he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus replied, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. So Jesus, it's his last night, sitting at a table, friends, enemies, and I'll give you some context. They're hanging out, they're eating this meal, and all of a sudden Jesus gets up and he starts washing people's feet. Why? This can be foreign to us because we're in a culture, a society where we're very independent. You know, we just don't go around saying, hey, can I just wash your feet right now? This seems like a really cool thing to do. And then we'd be like, no, get out of here. You know, cover your kids and run away. Really, the only time we wash our feet, other people wash their feet. Hopefully you wash your feet often. But other people wash their feet is when you pay some sort of fee at a spa, right? You pay some nominal fee and you say, sorry, can you do this for me? That's what I have to say. I apologize in advance. Or maybe the other context is like, you know, it's like late at night and you walk up to your wife and say, hey, babe, want me to wash your feet? Right? You know what I'm talking about? And you're like, let me wash your toes, right? Get the toe jam out, girl, come on. You can use that. You're welcome. All right? Write that down. Get the toe jam out. Come on, girl. All right. Those are really, don't clap for that, trust me. Oh, my wife left. Did she just leave? I started. She's like, I'm out of here. What am I talking about? Oh, washing feet. But in Jesus' culture, this was an everyday occurrence. This was incredibly normal. Because if you went to someone's house and they were there, they had servants, the servants would come and they'd wash your feet because you'd be walking around in dirt on the city streets and they'd wash your feet off with a towel so that it was a way of just like getting clean, a way of relaxing, a way of saying, welcome in into my home. This is very normal. This isn't like, oh my gosh, he's washing feet. You see, the weird thing is that it's Jesus doing it. And the reason why there's no servants there is because this was a rented room. This wasn't a house that Jesus or anyone else of his disciples owned. It was something they rented. So they walked in. There was no servants there to serve them. So they all just kind of sat down, apparently all on one side of the table, and just kind of hung out. Right? It's true. It's true. And it must have been a great view out there. So they're sitting there, and they start to eat. And I imagine that my interpretation is that there's probably other people around the table, some of the disciples, Jesus' disciples, that saw that basin of water there in the towel and were thinking, hey, you know, where's the servants? Like, my feet are dirty. Like, someone should wash these feet. This is gross. But, you know, I'm just going to continue eating. But Jesus sees this basic need, and he gets it from the table, and he walks across the room and grabs that basin of water and begins to like remove his clothes. He removes his robe and he throws it aside. And basically, at this point, he would just be like in a tunic, kind of like his shell, like kind of like undergarments. And as soon as Jesus reaches over and he touches that towel, he goes from being this Lord, being this Messiah, being this rabbi, this teacher, this leader, to this group of men. And what he says and communicates, what he actually screams out when he touches it, is, I am now a servant. And he gets down on his hands and knees, gets low, and begins to wash their feet. Friends and enemies. But here's the thing. It is important that what he is doing, that is a significant deal. But an even more significant deal is who is doing it. That Jesus just wasn't some really nice guy who saw a need and said, oh, I should just, you know, I'm done with my meal and I should just get up. You guys sit down, don't get up, let me grab this and I'll just hurry up and do it. Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus was fully God and fully man, the same God who created the heavens and the earth, the same God that breathed life into men and women, the same God who created the men sitting around this table. And he has every position. He has all the actual, real authority in heaven and earth to stand up and say, you know what? Judas, you're a jerk. You get over here and wash my feet, right? Like, I got them really extra dirty just for you. Get over here, right? He could have gone up to any of his disciples and said, Peter, you know what? You're always asking to serve me. Let's do it. Let's go. Like, Jesus had every position to do it, but instead he grabs a towel, wraps it around his waist, cinches it tight, and starts going to work. Why? Because this is who Jesus was. In the same way that God or Jesus is this incredibly relational person, Jesus used this relationship as a way of engaging and meeting people's basic needs time and time and time and time again. Jesus served people because he loved people. And on his last night, He is teaching. If you go through the rest of the scriptures up to verse 17, Jesus saying is, this is who I am. And if you want to follow me, this is who you are to be, to serve and engage people. See, Jesus throughout his whole life met people's needs. He was aware of the needs of people, from the most basic needs of feeding the hungry to the deep spiritual hungry, this longing that the woman at the well had. Jesus was able to meet all these needs. And as he walked this earth, engaging, sharing life with people, going on walks, dancing at weddings, sitting at wells, sharing life with people, he was looking for these ways that he could engage and love people and begin to invite them into relationship through serving, and loving. This is who Jesus was. And if you read in Philippians 2, it says this: in your relationships with one another, have the same attitude of mind Christ Jesus had, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing. By taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a human being, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Here God, in all his authority and all his power, sees a need. Us. Someone he loves. People. And there is this gap, there is this brokenness between us and himself. And out of love, out of compassion, he sends his son, being fully God, with all the position, all the authority, sends him to earth in the form of what? Not just a man, a baby. Comes as a baby and lives his life rubbing shoulders, experiencing the same struggles, experiencing the same challenges, time and time and time again. Experience the same hidden expectation of his parents over him and probably his neighbors looking at him. And he goes through his whole entire life looking for ways to engage with people and serving them because he loves us. Jesus, and Jesus later on ultimately takes the ultimate act of service and love by dying on the cross. And why? Why would he die on this cross? So that I have a spot at this table with him. Because of this gap, because of the way that we have taken control, the way that we've said, I am the boss, I'm going to do what I want, how I want, and when I want. I'm going to do it right now. That Jesus lived a perfect life and died on the cross in my place, what I deserve. Jesus took it upon himself as a way of love and as a way of serving us. And because of that, I can move from this table where there is no hope. Kitty table. There is no like this deep relationship where God invites me to this table to sit with him. I can hear what he thinks about me. I can hear his story. I can hear his words, how he loves me, and I can say it right back to him. See, what would it look like? Like, seriously, what would it look like if we could live a life like this? Where we have every opportunity throughout the day in our neighborhoods, at work, in your family, in your relationships with your friends. You have all the position to take control. You have all the position to use authority. Like, what would it look like instead if we could get low? Where we can engage in relationship with people, like honest, real relationships with our neighbors, with our families, and our friends. And as we're learning their names of our neighbors, and as they're over here and we're hanging out, we're like looking for ways where we can just like serve them, meet basic everyday needs. Something as simple as like grabbing the garbage can, you get home from work and it's still sitting out there, and the recycling can too, a double whammy, and you bring them both and put them by their house instead of kicking it over as a reminder, pick up your garbage, right? Maybe it's something like inviting the teenager that lives just down the street, like they got their license, and you invite them over because you have this skill, you have this way, like you know how to change a tire or maybe change oil. You're like, hey, let me teach you how to do this. Like, let's change the oil. Like, not in my car, but your car. Right? There's a big difference there. Like what it would look like if you could like just have a barbecue, invite people over and just share your stories. It might be something as simple as like grabbing a cup of coffee, a pot of coffee, bringing it over to your neighbor's house. They just got back from Florida from the winter and you're like, you know what? You have grandkids, but I don't know how you and your husband met. Can you tell me your story? Like there's ways that we can engage with people in relationship and ways we can serve them every single day. And I believe that this is something that God is inviting us into. To not just get a bunch of tasks done, to not just get a bunch of things we're checking off the box, but A, first, connecting with Jesus in a relational way. And out of that love, out of that compassion, out of that spirit, being able to turn around and be engaged with our neighbors, with our family, and our friends, and begin to serve. So here's what I'd like to do. I'm going to invite you to stand up. And just, well, okay, you stand up. Why not? You guys are like already like, all right, let's get out of here. So stand up. Yeah. And what I want to do is I want to invite God's presence in the same way in Philippians 2, how God kind of like moved into not just our culture, but he moved right next door. He moved and occupied right next to us. Like I'm going to invite God to come and do that right now. You know what? And maybe you're here. Maybe you're here and you feel like, Chris, this whole idea of sitting at this table, sitting at a table with Jesus, that seems really foreign to me. Like this whole idea of sitting and hearing his story or letting me be actually honest and be able to say what I really think about him, like at this table with him, maybe this is something that you've never done. Or maybe you're here and you feel like, I feel like I haven't had like a sit-down moment with Jesus. I don't feel like I've gotten lost in that relationship or a conversation with him for a really long time. And you feel like, I want that. Even as I was sharing that story about my wife having those conversations with her friends, and it just got completely consumed in that relationship. I believe Jesus wants to have that with us. If that's you, I'm just going to pray here in a little bit. If that's you, I'm just going to like, you don't have to like jump up and down. You don't have to run up here. You don't have to scream. Just I'm going to invite you just to simply receive. I believe God wants to engage with you in relationship. So I'm going to pray, and then we'll see what happens. So Holy Spirit, we invite you to come. And Jesus, we welcome you. And we want to sit at your table. And Jesus, we want to hear what you think about us instead of what the world or the culture or my neighbor, maybe a friend or a family member has to say about me. Jesus, I'm hungry to hear what you have to say about me. How you love me. How you notice me. God, I pray that we just begin to receive that even now. And where we feel distant from you, where we feel maybe even isolated from you, Jesus, I pray that you would just come close. I pray that as we take time to pray for another as we worship, Jesus, that we would just be able to feel your presence. As we take time to like worship is simply just like telling God what we think about him and then taking time to hear what he says about us, I pray, God, we'd be able to feel that, not just say it. We'd be able to experience that. So we welcome you, Jesus. Another thing I want to do as the worship team comes up, I'm going to invite our ministry team to make their way forward. These are people who are just people who are for your life, and they want to see good things happen in your life, and we believe we can experience that through engaging with God. And you can come up for anything you want. If you have a need, a financial need, a physical need, emotional need, but here's one thing I feel like God is doing. Like, you're here as I was talking about serving people, like engaging people in relationship. There's something inside of you that's really hungry for that, but you just feel like you just hit a wall. You don't know how to activate that. You get intimidated. You can't visualize it. You start sweating heavily or whatever it might be, all right? Like, I believe that God wants to give you what you need. The confidence, the resources, the words, like a whole like gambit of things. But sometimes where we have to start is by simply asking him for help. We simply just have to ask him and receive. The people up here are for you, they're for your life, and they want to see like really positive things happen in your neighborhood, and they love the opportunity to pray with you. So we're going to worship. You can come up and get prayer, and I hope you have an excellent rest of the weekend. Thanks for coming to the Vineyard.